Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 14 minutes or so, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. This week, in our series on the nature of God, we're looking at the salvation offered by God. Our Bible passage for the week is Matthew 16, 24 to 27. I'll read from the English Standard Version, the ESV. Then Jesus told his disciples, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done." He was born over 200 years ago, in 1812. When he was 12, he left school for 3 years to work in a factory because his father had been incarcerated in a debtor's prison. As a young man, he worked as a journalist, but his passion was writing novels. He wrote 15 of them, and hundreds of millions of copies of those novels have been sold. His name? Charles Dickens. Here are some famous lines from some of his novels. "Please, sir, I want some more. To do a great right, you may do a little wrong, and you may take any means which the end to be attained will justify." Those are from Oliver Twist. "The pain of parting is nothing to the joy of meeting again. Pride is one of the seven deadly sins, but it cannot be the pride of a mother in her children, for that is a compound of two cardinal virtues, faith and hope." Those are from Nicholas Nickleby. "My advice is, never do tomorrow what you can do today. Procrastination is the thief of time. Collar him." "My meaning simply is that whatever I have tried to do in life, I have tried with all my heart to do well. That whatever I have devoted myself to, I have devoted myself to completely. That in great aims and in small, I have been thoroughly in earnest." And those are from David Copperfield. "I only ask to be free. The butterflies are free. Mankind will surely not deny to Harold Skimpole what it concedes to the butterflies." There were two classes of charitable people. One, the people who did a little and made a great deal of noise. The other, the people who did a great deal and made no noise at all. Those are from Bleak House. "It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. It is a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest that I go to than I have ever known." And those are from A Tale of Two Cities. "Heaven knows we need never be ashamed of our tears, for they are rain upon the blinding dust of earth, overlying our hard hearts. I was better after I had cried than before, more sorry, more aware of my own ingratitude, more gentle. Ask no questions, and you'll be told no lies." Those are from Great Expectations. The most famous work written by Charles Dickens was not a novel. It was a novella, or something between a short story and a novel. Dickens wrote it in 6 weeks. Why did he write his most famous work? Most scholars say it was to highlight the misery of the working poor in England. John Broich, an associate professor of history at Case Western Reserve University in my home state of Ohio, says that Dickens was horrified by a government report on child labor and wrote to alert people to the terrible plight of England's poor children. Encyclopedia Britannica says that Dickens got the idea when he traveled to Manchester to speak at an event sponsored by an organization that advocated for the working poor, who were uneducated, powerless, and exploited by factory owners. Dickens decided that he needed to confront the problems of want and ignorance, which were, quote, being bred in the slums of the country's newly industrialized cities, end quote. Robert McNamara, who was Amazon's first history editor, agrees that the Manchester event affected Dickens greatly, but says that Dickens was motivated to comment on the enormous gap between the rich and the poor in Victorian England. I don't doubt that Dickens, who had worked in a factory when he was 12, wanted to comment on child labor and the conditions of the poor in England, but I think that he had another reason for writing his most famous work, A Christmas Carol. I think that he wanted to tell a story of salvation. Christian themes permeate all of Dickens's works. He explained why in a note to his friend, the Reverend D. McCrae. With a deep sense of my great responsibility always upon me when I exercise my art, one of my most constant and most earnest endeavors has been to exhibit in all my good people some faint reflections of the teachings of our great master, and unostentatiously to lead the reader up to those teachings as the great source of moral goodness. All my strongest illustrations are derived from the New Testament. All my social abuses are shown as departures from its spirit. All my good people are humble, charitable, faithful, and forgiving. Over and over again, I claim them in express words as disciples of the founder of our religion. When A Christmas Carol opens, we meet the main character, Ebenezer Scrooge, who is described as a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. But what made Scrooge that way, and can anything be done about it? The ghost of Scrooge's longtime business partner, Jacob Marley, certainly hopes so. Marley died on Christmas Eve 7 years ago. On this Christmas Eve, he appears before Scrooge, bearing a heavy chain that he forged in life, link after link of missed opportunities to help others. "Mankind was my business," he bellows to Scrooge. "The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business." "Your chain," he tells Scrooge, "is even heavier." To escape Marley's fate, Scrooge will have to heed three spirits that will visit him that night. When the first spirit shows him past Christmases, Scrooge sees two women who loved him. The first is his sister, who is now dead. The second is a woman to whom Scrooge once was engaged to be married. But Scrooge's fear of poverty caused him to place the pursuit of gain ahead of the woman he loved. When it became clear to Scrooge and the young lady that they no longer had a chance at happiness, they ended their engagement, and she went on to a life of joy with another man. The second spirit takes Scrooge on a tour of present-day Christmases. Scrooge sees his only living relative, the son of his sister. Every year, this nephew invites Scrooge over for Christmas, and every year, Scrooge refuses. Scrooge watches his nephew talk to the guests who have accepted his invitation to dinner. "Who suffers by his ill whims?" the nephew asks his guests. "Himself, always. Here, he takes it into his head to dislike us, and he won't come and dine with us." The consequence is that Scrooge loses pleasant moments with pleasant people. By the time the third spirit arrives, Scrooge claims to be ready to live to be another man from what he was. But first, he must see future Christmases and the aftermath of two deaths. The first is the death of Tiny Tim, the son of Scrooge's worker Bob Cratchit, which leaves a hole in the Cratchit family. The second death is that of an unidentified man, and this death causes people to celebrate. The spirit finally reveals that the unidentified man is Scrooge. "I am not the man I was," pleads Scrooge. "I will not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I am past all hope? Vowing to change his life, Scrooge awakens. It is Christmas Day, and Scrooge is a new man. Can someone who led a life of sin go to heaven by virtue of accepting Jesus late in life, even on his deathbed? Here are two stories from the Gospels that suggest that the answer is yes. The first is the story of the thief on the cross from Luke 23. One of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." The second is the parable of the workers in the vineyard from Matthew 20. Here's the end of that parable. "And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. Now when those hired first came, they thought they would receive more. But each of them also received a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, 'These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat.' But he replied to one of them, 'Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity?' So the last will be first, and the first last." Of course, salvation is not something you earn. It's a gift, one that none of us deserves. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified by His grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. That's Romans 3:23-24. God offers salvation freely to all who agree to repent and follow Jesus with their whole heart. Some people procrastinate on the repenting and following bit. The cost of that is pretty high, they figure, and they don't want to pay it right now. They'll get to it later. Sure, there's a cost, but there's an even bigger benefit, one that you get immediately. The assurance of salvation brings you joy. That joy enables you to do what is impossible without salvation. Enjoy, and even rejoice in, whatever life sends your way. Marley didn't understand that until it was too late. Scrooge found out just in time. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us and all of us. Next week, I'll talk about truth. I hope you'll join me for that. Please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.